Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across Northern British Columbia. Our podcast is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program that the Specialist Services Committee, which is a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from local health authorities. We are casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kleidlé-Tené First Nation.
Hello, you're listening to QualityCast North. I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Deanna Danskin.
Today, we're continuing in our series on healthcare quality and leadership, and we're turning to the topic of medical education. The quality of care that we provide as physicians starts with our training in medical school, and well before we even set eyes on our first patient. But how do medical schools ensure that the newly qualified doctors fresh out of their programs meet the standards of early clinical practice and safety expected of them by the general public? To talk about aspects of quality in medical school education is our guest today, Dr. Paul Winwood, Dean of the Northern Medical Program at the University of Northern British Columbia here in Prince George. Hello, Paul. So glad you could join us today.
Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for having me.
So one of the things we've been enjoying on this podcast is hearing a little bit of background and people's origin stories about how they ended up in the role that they did. And so before we get down to talking about the medical school and where you work, I wonder whether you could give us a little bit of background about yourself, about your journey into medicine, and how you ended up in your current role as Dean of the Medical School here in Prince George.
Sure. Well, it's quite a long story. The fact that I never really expected to get into medical school, but it seemed like a reasonable thing to go for. My father was a physician in London, UK, and I seemed to be reasonably proficient at the sciences. So I applied, and much to my surprise, was admitted to medical school at the London Hospital. And interestingly, even in my first year of medical school, one of my tutors said something like, "He's going to be an internist, this guy." And so... I did. After I graduated from the London, I went into an internal medicine training program in the UK. And one of the things that I decided fairly early on was that I wanted to live in a rural environment, but also found myself attracted to academic medicine. Anyway, I left London and went to work in regional hospitals for training, and then moved to Southampton, which is on the south coast of the UK, and did specialist GI training and research. I had the privilege there of working under Professor Ralph Wright and then Professor Michael Arthur, who were liver specialists, and I did liver research there after I did my GI training. And then as part of that, or following on from that, I had the opportunity to go to San Francisco and do a traveling research fellowship at UCSF. So I lived and worked in San Francisco for 18 months, and I guess I there had my appetite whetted for living on the West Coast. And then we went back to the UK, and I worked in Southampton again in an academic environment, but I wasn't living in the country, and so decided I wanted to move back to a smaller community, and was a gastroenterologist in Bournemouth. On the south coast, not that far from Southampton. And while I was there, I took on some leading roles or leadership roles in medical education, as well as leadership in gastroenterology. And that was both regional and in my hospital. After about 10 years, I realized I actually wanted to be more back into academic medicine and started exploring opportunities. About the same time, we had a vacation in Canada and loved it. And I started making inquiries for academic opportunities in Canada. And I happened to come across a wonderful advert for Health Match BC with a young physician and his family camped atop a mountain, and thought, well, that looks pretty nice. I contacted Health Match BC. Who said, well, actually, thank you for contacting us, but we don't need any gastroenterologists in BC right now. So I thought, well, fair enough. But anyway, send us your CV. And I did, and I heard nothing for a while. And then about a year later, my wife gets a call out of the blue, and it's Health Match BC. And they said, you know, we're in the UK at the moment, we'd love to talk to Paul. And she said, well, you'll be lucky because he's not here. He's in Edinburgh, which was at the other end of the country from where we lived, at least as far as Prince George's from Vancouver's. And he's up there examining. So he's busier and I don't think you'll get a chance to see him. They said, no, that's great. We're actually in Edinburgh this week. anyway, I did meet with Health Match PC, and what had happened was that my CV had obviously been with them for a while, and somehow they'd got talking to the predecessor of my current role, Dave Snadden, who was the regional dean for the Northern Medical Program at the time, and he got to see my CV and he said, well, we're looking for an academic internist and we need a gastroenterologist in Prince George for the Northern Medical Program. And so it was almost set to be. And from that, I spoke to Dave and he invited me out to Prince George and we visited and we were so impressed with UNBC and the Northern Medical Program and the people we met and the community. But it was a pretty easy decision to move here. So I came here as an academic internist and gastroenterologist. And then Dave moved on a few years later to a more central position at UBC, and his position was vacated. And I applied for and was appointed to be the regional dean, which is what I've been doing since 2012. And I have had the absolute privilege now to lead the Northern Medical Program and other UBC programs in the north, and it's just been an absolute pleasure in this role. So yeah, quite a long story, but that's how I got here, and I've been here since 2008.
That's a great story, and it all started off with someone noticed a spark of intelligence there and sent you down the road of being an internist. So that's very astute.
There you
Excellent.
Go.
Well, let's just move on, talk about the medical school a little. And I have to say, it's a little bit unusual for a relatively small town like Prince George to have its own medical school. And I wonder whether you can tell us a little bit about the school's history and how the Northern Medical Program came into being.
Yeah, and for me, this is a really inspiring and unique story because... you know, the Northern Medical Program came to be as a result of community action. And just to explain that, so back in 2000, there was a healthcare crisis in Northern BC and physicians were leaving. And to some extent, there was a healthcare crisis across BC, a little bit like now, but worse than now. And there was a healthcare rally that was called in BC and the CN, in Prince George, in the CN Centre, and I wasn't here then, but I've heard this story many times. That some 8,000 people went to a healthcare rally in the CN Centre to talk about what needed to be done about this physician shortage and drain of people were leaving, as I say. And apparently, almost spontaneously, what came out of that meeting was a cry for, we need a medical school in Northern BC. And I've spoken to many of the folk who were there, including Charles J. Goer, who was the then president of UNBC, and Mike Milan, who's one of our senior orthopedic surgeons in Prince George. And they say that it was just a spontaneous thought. Someone said, we need a medical school. And everyone said, yes, that's what we need. And so following that, Charles Jago and others immediately set to work exploring how we could bring a medical school to the north. And they traveled around the world looking at medical schools in smaller communities, particularly in Australia. And they came to the conclusion fairly quickly that it would be hard to go it alone, but what we call the distributed program, where you have a central medical school with a site in a more remote site with a program in a remote site would be the best way to go. So they linked up with UBC and obviously had a number of meetings and put together a proposal which went to government in 2002 for a medical school in Prince George. And at the same time, there had been some interest from Victoria. So in fact, they put in for a medical school in Victoria on Vancouver Island. And what absolutely amazed me about this story is that that was agreed by the government in 2002 And the doors for the medical school, including the new building, recruiting all the faculty and staff, admitting students, opened in 2004. So the 2 years from the time that there was an agreement to open a medical school, all driven by community, we had a medical school here in Prince George. And so what we have now is what we call a distributed medical program. It was the first and is now is the largest distributed medical program in Canada and one of the largest in North America, with sites in Vancouver, of course, Prince George, Victoria, and also Kelowna now. So it's an amazing story, and I'm proud to be a part of it, and it inspires me.
That is quite an amazing story, actually, and all I've set into motion by, as you say, community action and a really rapid evolution once that had been approved. So that is also quite a success story. And then what is your role in particular as regional dean for the medical school involve?
Yeah, so I have two titles, actually. I have the title of being Regional Associate Dean for the Faculty of Medicine at UBC and Associate Vice President for the Division of Medical Sciences at UNBC. And as you just heard from the history with UNBC being really, really key to the development of the school, it is a program that's delivered in partnership between UBC and UNBC, although the curriculum is UBC's, and that was undoubtedly the best way to go. Anyway, my role is to be the academic officer for the dean at UBC for all UBC Faculty of Medicine activities in the north. So that includes overseeing and leading the Northern Medical Program, but also overseeing the Masters of Physical Therapy program, the Occupational Therapy program, the residency programs, and also the research activity of all the faculty that we have here in the north to run those programs and teaching those programs.
Okay, well, thank you for clarifying that. That's quite a lot of hats you have to wear.
It is. It really is, yeah. Makes it interesting.
So I can imagine that maintaining quality in an educational institution might be somewhat different than a clinical medical practice or a hospital, or maybe there's similarities. So since you have a lot of experience in both of these environments, can you highlight any of those similarities or differences when it comes to ensuring quality?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the main difference is that we are looking at quality in education rather than quality in healthcare. Although obviously, because we're involved in health professions programs, we are, there's obviously a close relationship. But the outcomes that we're looking at are educational outcomes rather than healthcare outcomes. But of course, there's a lot of similarities. The methodologies are similar. We're comparing to known standards in medical education. We look at a combination of hard outcomes, such as exam results, where people are in practice, what type of trainees that we are training, as well as a lot of outcomes from surveys, which look at the quality of the experience that our learners have had.
So I know you've kind of touched on a few of these things, but are there, there's obviously a lot of metrics that are monitored in the medical program. So I'm not sure if you would maybe touch on some of these key metrics that you monitor, and how do these help you in your role as dean to continually improve the program?
Yeah, there's a lot of metrics. I mean, I guess we break them down into those that are more strategic and those that are more specific to the programs we run. And some of them are specific to ensuring that we meet or we provide the data that's generated through accreditation. And so the sorts of things that are strategic are looking at our long-term outcomes, that's to say where our graduates are practicing, looking at what we call the learner profile, which is essentially who we're admitting to medical school, looking at our residency match through the CALMS process, looking at the national MCC exam results. Are we performing as well as other schools? Are we, did this year perform as well as last year? It's a very detailed analysis. So what areas do our students not do so well in? And so therefore, what do we need to focus in? Looking at our learning environment, that's really important.
I'm curious about the learner profile. So you kind of described what it is, but how are you using this to improve medical teaching? And how do you think this has sort of changed over the, say, past 8 to 10 years?
So the learner profile is really about saying, who do we admit to medical school? And this is actually done every year. So they look at the admitted class and ask them a whole load of different questions. And these include things, simple things like gender and sexual orientation. And we want to know that we are admitting a class that is representative of our community, of the population of British Columbia. We're interested in their geographic background, which province do they come from? So roughly 80% of our learners come from BC. We're also interested in whether they came from urban or rural backgrounds. And for us, in Prince George, that's a really important piece because we, our mandate was to train physicians and now occupational therapists and physiotherapists who will practice in northern BC and in rural communities. And so one of the things that I always look at is what proportion of our learners have come from the north, what proportion have come from rural communities. I think it's fair to say that if we look back to before we had the Northern Medical Program, that the number of students coming from the north and from rural communities has increased quite significantly. And so pretty consistently in the NMP, about 60 to 65% of our students come from rural communities and about 40% come from the north. I would like both of those figures to be higher. And so that's my CQI piece. But that's pretty good. I mean, it compares with less than 10% in the other sites. So, there's a metric that's important to us. We look at the ethnicity and religion of our learners. We look at the number of students with reported disabilities, their language profile, how many languages they speak, what their socioeconomic status is, their academic background. And we're also interested in their practice interests and whether they're planning to stay in this province, whether they're interested in family medicine, whether they're interested in rural medicine. So it's a pretty broad assessment of each class.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It sounds like trying to capture more diversity too in the medical student. So now moving on to another metric that you spoke about, and I think it's something, it's obviously a key goal of the Northern Medical Program, and I think it's really of interest to the general public too, is the long-term practice outcomes of the school. So has the program achieved its aims in terms of improving physician recruitment and retention in the North?
I think the simple answer is yes. I still would like to do better, but I think the simple answer is yes. I've now been in this role 10 years, so I've seen the data generate over the past 10 years. And it's now pretty consistent that around 56% of our grads go into family medicine. And if you think about it, it's mostly family physicians that we need in rural communities and in the north. And if that compares with around 40% for UBC as a whole, and slightly less across the country. So that's a pretty good figure. And again, consistently, around 65% of our graduates are going or are practicing now in rural and northern communities. And if you think about 56% in family medicine and therefore the 44% are in specialty medicine, most specialists will be working in larger communities. So the denominator is to 56% or perhaps a bit more than that. And so that 65% in rural and northern communities, I think, is really good. Overall, around 30% of our grads are working in the north. And that's slightly higher in family practice. It's around 32 to 34% in family practice that are in the north, and lower in the specialties because, of course, many specialists work in large urban centres. That said, we have 18 of our grads working as specialists in northern BC, which, when you consider the age of our program, but it only started in 2004, and specialty training in many specialties is 5 years or more on top of a 4-year MD, that's actually pretty good.
That's something to be proud of for sure. And I was just anecdotally, I was speaking with one of our nephrologists here today at the hospital, and Dr. Singh, and he had mentioned that they're hiring a Northern Medical Program grad who has gone away for residency and is returning to practice nephrology here. So that's really exciting.
It's exciting, and each year we're just seeing more and more come back. So it is exciting to see. And in just about every specialty now, we have Northern Medical Program grads working.
That is an excellent metric, actually, and it really just puts rubber stamps the whole evolution, the whole mandate of the medical school as a whole, I think, in delivering its original aims, which is wonderful. But metrics aside, I wonder, can you tell us about any individual success stories that spring to mind from the program during your tenure?
And perhaps these are more general, but there are lots, to be honest with you. But actually, one of the most exciting things for me is that when I go into the hospital, I invariably meet grads from our program who are working in the hospital. And when I'm working in the hospital, particularly doing internal medicine on the clinical teaching unit, I'm invariably supervising grads in our residency programs, or I'm consulting with other specialists, some of whom are our grads. So that's really exciting. And then if I travel across northern BC, and I do that as much as I can to reach out to our communities where we train our learners. In almost every community in northern BC now, I meet our grads. And so that's really exciting, and to me, it's a huge sign of success. But perhaps one of the really good success stories, and again, we need to build on this and can do better, is that since we have started, we've graduated around 400 grads now, 19 of whom are Indigenous. And a good number of those Indigenous grads are working in Indigenous communities as well as our other grads. And that's really fantastic to see, is to see our graduates actually going out to and working in Indigenous communities. And quite a lot of them working for Carrier Sukarni Family Services, which is based out of Prince George, but doing outreach practice to remote and rural Indigenous communities. And I think there are some real improvements in healthcare for those communities, and that's something we need to do some QI on as well, actually. But anecdotally, I think there's some amazing improvements. And then perhaps in terms of individual stories, and I mean, I hate to say these are the best stories, but we've had graduates go into every specialty, including neurosurgery, cardiac surgery, plastic surgery, orthopedics. And many people said that it was impossible to have a medical school in Prince George. How could you possibly have a medical school up there? And if you could, they wouldn't somehow be as good as other graduates, because obviously you can't train people. Well, we can, and we've put graduates into every specialty, and they're coming out the other end now as trained neurosurgeons and cardiac surgeons and everything. And even if they're not working in Prince George in the north, they've had that experience. And so when a patient gets referred to a Vancouver neurosurgeon who's an NMP grad, they will understand exactly what their patients are going through to have to go down to Vancouver for their treatment.
So you're clearly a very busy fellow. And so with your hectic schedule, that includes medical school, clinical commitments, all the leadership things that you're doing for the medical school. How do you protect yourself from burning out?
Well, that's a challenge. You know, well, I think the first thing is I am extremely lucky to have a very supportive wife and family. You know, I mean, honestly, my home life is my bedrock and my the foundation for everything I do. And it's important to me that I make time for home. I think the second thing I will say is that I'm a work hard, play hard person. I always have been, and I play hard as well as work hard. And I guess living in the north, much of the play hard is outdoor activities. We're all very keen skiers in my family, and we're just starting out on the downhill ski season and cross country skiing now. In the summer, we love hiking, and we're lucky to live on a lake. We do lots of water sports, kayaking and canoeing and boating and fishing. So I try to make time for those things. It's important. If you don't, I think you do burn out. So yeah, time for activities, time for family, and ultimately having a really supportive family that help me with that. Yeah.
I think you started to allude to this a little bit with some of the activities you enjoy, but what do you enjoy about living and working in Northern BC?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the outdoor activities, but, you know, I think the main thing for me is the community. It's the people that I work with. And I mean, everything we've talked about today and the success of the medical program is down to the commitment and support of the people I work with. And that really is everyone. So we were talking about COVID and how we adapted and got through that. We couldn't have done that without the commitment of our health professionals, our physicians, and other health professionals who teach our learners. And all the successes of the medical program boil down to that. But I also work with the most amazing team of people up at UNBC, and they are so committed and supportive, and they tolerate me and all the crazy ideas I have. and it's just fantastic to work with those people, and that just makes life that just helps me get up in the morning and go to work. And so I think the community is the main thing. And then, of course, you know, one of the great things about living in the north is you can get to just about anywhere without getting in a traffic jam, thank goodness. And I have lived in big cities, and boy, it gets frustrating. So yeah, but, I mean, that's lovely. You can get to just about anywhere in Prince George within about 20 minutes.
You're not our first guest who has mentioned the traffic situation as being a benefit of Northern BC.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And that, you're so right. The community is the best up here, isn't it, in the north? So that speaks a lot for the quality of life up here. Absolutely. Well, I can hear the closing music now, which means sadly we're reaching the end of the interview. So it just remains for me to thank you, Paul, for coming on today's show. It's been really illuminating having you on the show today. And as a token of our appreciation, one of our exclusive and highly coveted QualityCast North coffee mugs will be making its way to you shortly. And if you, the listener, would like to know more about today's guest and topic, you can find the show notes on our website, where you'll also find links to our other episodes. And if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our channel on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. But until next time, I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Deanna Danskin.
And you've been listening to QualityCast North. Today's episode was hosted and co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Deanna Danskin, with technical support from Matt Walker. Original music by Daniel Chewy, and artistic support by Reggie Goodine. QualityCast North is recorded on the traditional territory of the Clayclaytonay First Nation. If you enjoyed today's interview, check out our other episodes available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.